Hello, this is Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, March the 17th, and a happy St. Patrick's Day to you. And the first article has the headline, Hairy Day at School, Staff Members Lose Hair, Beards for a Good Cause. Dateline Danville. In the nearly 2 years that Ryan Warren has taught at Northridge Middle School in Danville, students and staff have never seen him without a beard. It's kind of been his identity, fellow teacher Kathy Delzell said of Warren's facial hair, worn short around his jawline and longer on his chin. But early afternoon on Thursday, the 7th grade social studies teacher was sporting a new clean-shaven look. It feels weird, but it's for a good cause, said Warren, who had his beard shaved to raise money and awareness for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Warren was one of 15 staff members who volunteered to lose their hair in solidarity with cancer patients who lose their hair during treatment. If students and staff raised $1,000 during the fundraiser sponsored by the Builders Club, by Thursday morning, they had raised $1,500. I never doubted it, said Delzell, the club sponsor, who was hoping to raise a little more at parent-teacher conferences later that night. Almost everyone has been affected by cancer, and I can't say enough about this staff. They always come through and support our projects. This is the 5th year the club, a Kiwanis international organization, has held the drive. In past years, it raised about $300. This year, the club was challenged to raise $1,000 by Phil Weber, a 7th grade English teacher who lost his infant son, David, to cancer in 2008. I felt with as many kids as we have in the building, we could do more, said Weber, who got students on board by sharing his son's story. David was about 6 months old when he was diagnosed with rhabdoid sarcoma of the liver. It's so rare that he was one of fewer than 50 people in the world to have it at that time, said Weber, then a teacher at Kenwood Elementary in Champaign. David underwent chemotherapy, but the cancer spread. He died 2 weeks before his first birthday. Weber said he and his wife spent a lot of time at St. Louis Children's Hospital, where David was being treated. During that time, they met many other children who had lost their hair during chemo. When the doors to the community room opened up, everyone would look up, and you could just see them thinking, is this person going to laugh at me, Weber recalled. Once they realized who you were, and you weren't going to judge them, they went back to being kids again. You could see on their face that they'd been laughed at or ostracized. I thought shaving our heads is a way to show solidarity, while also giving students a strong motivation to donate to the cause, continued Weber, who was involved in similar cancer fundraisers at Kenwood and Dr. Howard Elementary in Champaign. Weber was thrilled when his colleagues at North River, where he has taught for 2 years, stepped up to have their head shaved, or in Warren's case, his beard. Teacher David Carlson was the first to take a barber chair for a shaving, which took place on the cafetorium stage before a cheering crowd of 7th and 8th graders during 3 lunch periods. Great Clips manager Brooke Greider and stylist Lisa Clodfelter did the honors. I actually been bald before, said Carlson, who was diagnosed with Ewing's sarcoma, a cancerous tumor that grows in the bones or in the soft tissue around the bones almost 6 years ago. He has been cancer-free since having surgery to remove a tumor on the bottom of his foot and undergoing chemotherapy. The crowd roared when hall monitor Glenn Rowell, who spent 6 years growing his hair for dreadlocks, took a seat. He only let Greider snip a few inches off of 4 dreads. When Clodfelter began giving Weber one of the closer shaves, his students squealed and lined up to take pictures on their cell phone. One student even live-streamed it to Facebook. In the other chair, Lindsay Porter, the only female, allowed Greider to put her long brown hair into pigtails and snip them off. This puts me over 6 feet of hair, the PE and health teacher said, referring to the total amount she has had cut and donated to Wigs for Kids, which provides free wigs to young cancer patients. Porter made her first donation when she worked with Weber at Dr. Howard, and the school raised $5,000 for cancer. When he told me he wanted to do this here, I said, you know what I'm going to do, she said. It touches my heart. My grandfather had it, and my cousin just won the battle. Other volunteers included teachers Chris Campbell-Stanley, Clint Cunningham, Matt Milligan, Nick Brines, Troy Stimack, Joe Dickin, and Brian Klepp. guided counselors Tyler Ferber and Justin Thorlson, head custodian Matt Lewis, and former dean Scott Fogle, who now works at the high school. And the next article has the headline, Danville Facility to Close in April. Dateline Danville. A surgery center in Danville is tentatively set to close at the end of the month, pending state regulatory approval. The deadline to ask the Illinois Health Facilities and Services Review Board to conduct a hearing on the closure is today. The Ambulatory Care Center for Excellence in Surgical Services, or Access Center, at 26 West Newell Road has been losing $1 million a year for the past 2 years because of low use, according to the application filed by officials of Presence Health. Continuing to operate at this level of financial loss could threaten the future viability of Presence Health in the Danville market, said Presence's application to the state board. The 2016 net loss was expected to be about $1.2 million, and losses totaled nearly $1.6 million the previous year. The surgery center, formerly called Danville Healthcare, was acquired by Presence United Samaritans Medical Center in 2012, when the hospital's parent company was called Provena. Dr. Jared Rogers, Presence Health's regional president and CEO, said the closure won't affect service in the area because most procedures done at the surgery center will continue to be performed at United Samaritans. Most Access employees have accepted jobs at Presence United Samaritans or Presence Covenant Medical Centers, he said. This decision was made consistent with our Presence Health standard of excellent, safe, quality, and compassionate care for the patients in our community, he said. The application for an exemption permit filed by Present doesn't require a hearing before the state board and could be acted upon by the board chairman in upcoming weeks. And the next article has the headline, Northeast's 5K to raise money for project. Dateline Danville, there's still time to register for Northeast Elementary Magnet School's fourth annual Color Burst 5K Family Fun Run next month at Winter Park. Kate Cox, race director and speech therapist at Northeast, said participants may still register and receive a free t-shirt through Sunday night by going to www.necolorburst5k, that's all one word, .org, or emailing necolorburst5k@gmail.com. Late registration without a free t-shirt ends Thursday, March 23rd. We will not have any walk-up race day registration, she said, explaining that she has to know how many people will participate in the 5K ahead of time so she can order the right amount of color packets. We order the color based on the number of people participating, she said. The Color Burst 5K is a fun run for the whole family. Northeast School's mission is to promote an environment of health and wellness, and the focus of the Color Burst 5K is to share that mission with the community. The ultimate goal is to have entire families at the event, being active, having fun, and getting colorful. The event kicks off at 10 a.m. Saturday, April 8th at the Danville Area Soccer Complex in Winter Park, 900 East Winter Avenue. Should any last-minute changes need to be made, Cox said they will be posted at www.anycolorburst5k.org. A packet pickup and health expo event is set for the night before the race from 4:30 to 7 p.m. Friday, April 7th at Winter Park. Various people and businesses will be on hand with health and wellness information at the expo. Sunglasses, temporary tattoos, grass skirts, fun headbands, tutus, fairy wings, and individual color packages also will be available for sale during the packet pickup and health expo. The Color Burst 5K run has been a hit ever since it started 4 years ago, consistently drawing about 1,000 participants. As of midweek, Cox said 500 participants already had registered for this year's event. Approximately 800 participated in last year's run. 500 people at a 5K is still wonderful, she said. It's a little earlier this year, Cox acknowledged, explaining that event organizers were careful not to schedule the event on Easter weekend or the same weekend as Illinois Marathon on April 20th to the 22nd. To make the annual event run smoothly, it takes a dedicated committee and lots of volunteers. Approximately 75 to 100 volunteers are expected the day of the race, but more volunteers are welcome. We have great community volunteers. They help with setting up and tearing down and throwing the colors, she said. We also couldn't do it without our group of hardworking parent volunteers. Nearly 40 local businesses also help support the event with donations of in-kind services and more. 7 businesses will be in charge of the 7 color stations that are set up every half mile of the run. Different businesses will douse color packets on the participants so that they will be colorful by the time they reach the finish line. With 7 color stations, Cox said, we've got all the colors of the rainbow this year. Illini Skateland will provide music for the event, and Joyful Bubbles will be there creating giant bubbles. Professional kite flyers from the Chicago area will be a new feature this year. This will add a festive tone to the event, Cox said. And of course, at the finish line, several bursts of the color powder will take place. The proceeds from the event will go toward Northeast Fitness Park that is open to the community. The fitness park features 3 quarter-mile track loops. The kids love it. They use it daily, Cox says of the track. We want to add 20 fitness stations with self-guided signs, which would be good because we want the community to use the fitness park. It's a park for the community during off-school hours. Cox said the school needs to raise $15,000, $10,000 for the fitness station signage, and another $5,000 to have them permanently installed. She hopes that with the money raised from the Color Burst 5K last year plus this year's event, the school will reach its $15,000 goal. And the next has the headline, Conservation District to Host Maple Syrup Open House. Dateline, Westville. Most consumers might not wonder just how much maple syrup they put on their morning flapjacks actually comes from tree sap. But this Sunday at the Forest Glen County Preserve, park visitors can try the real thing, pure maple syrup made fresh on site. The Vermilion County Conservation District will host their annual maple syrup open house from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday in the Pioneer Homestead area at Forest Glen. Amy Steeples, program secretary for the district, said what makes their event special from other pancake meals is they always serve their Forest Glen maple syrup. I don't believe we've ever had to use anyone else's syrup at the dinner, she said. According to Steeples, the district plans to serve between 400 to 800 pancake and sausage meals for the event. Entry fees are $5 for adults and $2.50 for children younger than 12. Visitors can also see a demonstration of how the syrup is made inside the Sugar Bush building, which will be open along with the Pioneer Cabin. Steeple said there will be a small, limited amount of pure maple syrup on sale to be taken home. Pints are priced at $12 each and quarts at $24, with a limit of 2 pints or 1 quart per person. No advanced orders will be taken. She also said they anticipate they will sell out of syrup on Sunday. Susan Biggs Warner, historical interpreter for the district, said the event started out as Gary Wilford giving demonstrations on how Native Americans made maple syrup. From there, she said the sugar bush was built with a wood burning evaporated for commercial production. She said they put out about 450 taps per year. You don't count the number of trees, you count the taps you put out, Biggs Warner said. According to the district's website, the commercial maple syrup production began in 1984. The site also states production is dependent on weather conditions. Ideally, nighttime temperatures of 20s followed by a sunny day in the 40s will cause the sap to flow in the sugar maple tree. If the temperatures remain constant, the sap ceases to flow. Therefore, the fluctuation is required. According to Biggs Warner, just under 50 gallons of tree sap will produce 1 gallon of finished maple syrup. This year, they made about 30 gallons of syrup, but it takes a lot of hard work to get there. Before we get to the day of the dinner, our staff is out drilling the holes, tapping the trees, collecting the sap, and they tap generally in February, she said. In one day, they might collect as many as 800 gallons of sap. From there, she said, the water is boiled out, turned to steam, which pours out and spreads a sweet smell around the site. And if they collect too much, Biggs Warner said their staff might be out all night keeping the evaporator burning. She added the production process is a great science lesson for the kids. When they come out, they learn history, they learn natural sciences with how the trees work, and then they learn physical science. From this converts to that, she said, so it's a threefold thing. Biggs Warner also said the difference in taste from store-bought syrup is easy to notice. She pointed out most retail brand syrups are made with corn syrup, with little to no maple syrup and artificial ingredient or artificial ingredients for flavoring. Once you taste this and then you taste ours, you will think this tastes awful or waxy, she said. This is thick all the time because it has things like gum in it, but ours is hot. If you pour it, it's a lot thinner than the fake stuff, but it has way more flavor. And the next article has the headline, Troopers to Assist with April Interstate Construction, Dateline Danville. State troopers will be working with the Illinois Department of Transportation in April on a major road construction project. According to a press release from Illinois State Police Safety Education Officer Tracy Lillard, construction is set to begin on April 17th on Interstate 74 Bridge, just west of Bowman Avenue Interchange. Both eastbound and westbound lanes will be affected, and the work will continue for several months. Lillard reminded motorists to be prepared to slow down this construction zone season. Remember, work zone speed limits are enforced, regardless if the workers are present or not, she said in the release. Troopers in the photo enforcement vans can capture your picture, speed, and license plate information, and send the citation in the mail. Speeding in a construction zone fines start at $750, Lillard added. She also reminded motorists to move over for police, fire, EMS, road construction, tow trucks, and civilian vehicles on the side of the roadway with their emergency lights activated. Another major road construction project will begin April 3rd in Champaign County, according to Lillard, which will last for approximately 8 months. She said it will be located on both northbound and southbound lanes of Interstate 57 between milepost 224 and 236. And now we'll do the obituaries. And the first is for Betty Conway, of 83, of Tilton, who died at 8:02 p.m. Wednesday, March 15th at Presence United Samaritans Medical Center in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Robeson Chapel, 103 Douglas Street, Catlin. And the next is for Palmalee Pam Rennie Taylor. That first name is spelled P-A-L-M-A-L-E-A. Palmalee Rennie Taylor, 90, passed away peacefully, surrounded by family, on Monday, March 13th in Mansfield, Texas. Okay. Memorials can be made to the Pam Taylor Scholarship Fund at the Lakeview College of Nursing or to the donor's choice. And the next is for David H. Kirk, 73, of Danville, who died suddenly on Tuesday, March 14th at his home. Visitation will be on Friday, March 17th from 4 to 7 p.m. at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East William Street in Danville. Mass will be on Saturday, March 18th at 11 a.m. at Holy Family Catholic Church, 444 East Main Street in Danville, with Father Loftus officiating. Burial will follow at Resurrection Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be left in David's name to Schlarman Academy and Holy Family Church. And the next is for Carolyn L. Anderson, 77, formerly of Rossville, who died on Tuesday, March 14th at Carroll Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of Carolyn's life will take place at Sunset Memorial Park at the chapel on Saturday, March 18th at 1 p.m. Per Carolyn's wishes, cremation will be handled through Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center with entombment at a later date. And the next is for Edward Aaron Bird, 97, of Ridge Farm, who died on Saturday, March 11th at Pleasant Meadows Senior Living in Chrisman. A celebration of Edward's life will be held Monday, March 18th at 11 a.m. at Sunset's Houghton Leisure Funeral Home, 200 East West Street, Georgetown. Pastors Joe and Mindy White will officiate. He will be laid to rest at Crown Hill Cemetery in Ridge Farm. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the funeral. Military honors will be performed by the Chrisman American Legion. Memorials may be made in Edward's name to the Ridge Farm Friends Church. And now, an article with the headline, IDR gives Vermillion County tentative 2016 multiplier. Dateline Springfield. Vermillion County has been issued a tentative property assessment equalization factor of 1.0000, according to Constance Beard, director of the Illinois Department of Revenue. The property assessment equalization factor, also called the multiplier, is the method used to achieve uniform property assessments among counties, as required by law, according to a release from Beard's office. This equalization is important because some of the state's 6,600 local taxing districts overlap into two or more counties, that is, school districts, junior college districts, fire protection districts. If there were no equalization among counties, substantial inequities among taxpayers with comparable properties would result. Since state law requires property in Illinois to be assessed at one-third of its market value, farm property is assessed differently with farm home sites and dwellings, subject to regular assessing and equalization procedures, but with farmland and farm buildings assessed according to standards based on productivity. The equalization factor is determined annually for each county by comparing the sales price of individual properties sold over the past 3 years to the assessed value placed on those properties by the county supervisor of assessments or the county assessor. If this three-year average level of assessment is one-third of market value, the equalization factor will be 1. If the average level of assessment is greater than one-third of market value, the equalization factor will be less than 1. And if the average level of assessment is less than one-third of market value, the equalization factor will be greater than 1. Assessments in Vermillion County are at 33.22% of market value based on sales of properties in 2013, 14, and 15. The equalization factor being assigned is for 2016 taxes payable in 2017. Last year's equalization factor for the county was 1.0000. The tentative factor is subject to change if the County Board of Review takes actions that significantly affect the county assessments, or if local officials or others can present data showing that the Department of Revenue's estimates of the average level of assessments in the county should be adjusted. A public hearing on the tentative multiplier will be scheduled between 20 and 30 days after the tentative factor is published in a newspaper of general circulation within the county. A change in the equalization factor does not mean total property tax bills will increase or decrease. Tax bills are determined by local taxing bodies when they request money each year to provide services to local citizens. If the amount requested by local taxing districts is not greater than the amount received in the previous year, then total property taxes will not increase, even if assessments may have increased. The assessed value of an individual property determines what portion of the tax burden a specific taxpayer will assume. The individual's portion of tax responsibility is not changed by the multiplier. And the next article has the headline, Illinois could lose $40 billion in federal Medicaid support. Dateline Springfield, Illinois could face nearly $40 million, billion, that's billion, with a B, in lost federal Medicaid support over 10 years under a health care overhaul proposed last week by congressional Republicans. And a health industry program spokesman told lawmakers Thursday. Three state House committees heard testimony from experts on how major changes to Medicaid outlined in the American Health Care Act could impact Illinois recipients. The GOP plan to replace former President Barack Obama's health care law would phase out an expansion of Medicaid and cap federal spending for the entire program going forward. President Donald Trump supports the proposal. Illinois Health and Hospital Association spokesman David Gross testified that Illinois would lose at least $40 billion in federal Medicaid funding over the Act's 10-year lifespan. The association arrived at this figure by taking Illinois' share of the nation's Medicaid expansion population and multiplying it by the $880 billion in reductions estimated by the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office under the Republican plan. Gross said the cuts would jeopardize patient care. Democratic Representative Greg Harris of Chicago, who chairs the Appropriations Committee for Human Services, said one in four Illinois citizens receives Medicaid benefits and could be affected. Illinois currently devotes $10 billion in state funds each year to Medicaid, or about one quarter of the state's general fund. The federal government currently matches that amount. Harris said lawmakers would need to find ways to fill the $4 billion a year hole. That's money the state has to come up with out of tax dollars, Harris said. Otherwise, he explained, Illinois would have to cover less people, offer fewer services, or cut rates to care providers. The Republican plan would phase out the Affordable Care Act's nationwide expansion of Medicaid to 11 million additional low earners. 650,000 Illinois citizens have gained coverage under the expansion, the federal match for which would begin to diminish in 2020 under the proposal. Gross said two-thirds of those enrolled under the expansion could face restricted federal coverage by 2021, depending on fluctuations in income or other circumstances. The overhaul would also cap federal support given to states for Medicaid recipients instead of matching whatever states decide to spend. This has been Lois Pausch reading the Vermain County News for March 17th, 2017. I look forward to reading with you again soon. And again, happy St. Patrick's Day.